Hi friends, welcome to the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is the quick hit for the August 2nd, 2017 show at Madison Square Garden. This was night 10 of the Baker's Dozen. And we are here with Mike, who is at MikeLowTPT on Twitter. Hey Mike, thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem, Matt. It's great to be here. And partially recovered, I think, from last night at this point. So had a really
excellent.
Good time.
Excellent. I understand you just made it back to home in the D.C. area.
You got it. Yeah, just off the bus and ready to chat about the great show last night.
Excellent. And so just for context for everybody, was this your first show of the run, or have you seen others on the Baker's Dozen?
This was fortunately my third show of the run. I saw Saturday and Sunday last weekend and was able to run up. And meet my brother, of all people, for our show last night. So I did have some experience in the room, and I got to say the energy level is still as high as it was over the weekend, and even achieved new heights, I would think, by the end of the show last night. So
Awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
So before we talk about the show between the two of us, we did get one submission from last night for a quick review. So let's check out what somebody had to say live in the moment.
What's up, HFP? This is Matt coming to you live from the secret hiding place at work. We're talking about night 10 of the Baker's Dozen. Way down in the hole opener was a nice treat, especially for anyone who's ever watched The Wire. You'll know why that's important. Right into Buried Alive, which I think most people would have assumed would be the opener. A lot of good energy through the set, even though it was 12 songs, which you don't usually expect from a longer song set. The meet into Maze was particularly nice, even despite Fishman's little flub, but that was funny. Kind of lent to the playfulness of the set. Nice spacey drop into a rage in Maze. And then we find ourselves in set two. Are you kidding me with that giant Mike song? One of the longest ever, if not the longest ever, if I'm not mistaken, into Oh Holy Night. The stage is filled with steam, the entire crowd going crazy, not even knowing what's going on, into a jammed out Taste. That's just so emblematic of the way Fish is playing right now. They can jam anything and will jam anything. Don't miss these last three shows. If you can get there, be there. Peace.
Okay, thanks. And as we've mentioned on other episodes, if you want to send us a quick clip, fire up that voice memo app on your phone and then email it in to helpingfriendlypodcast@gmail.com. So back to our discussion, Mike, what was kind of your overall impression of the show last night, especially kind of measuring it up against some of the other shows that you saw on the run already?
Well, I would say, you know, overall, it pretty much, I would think it sort of stacked up against the other ones. I was really pleased with the cover to open the show, Way Down in a Hole, Tom Waits, or as some have said, the theme song to The Wire. It seemed very appropriate and was a good way to start. And, you know, overall, I thought the first set was really well played. I had, all of the composed stuff in Gaiuti was really nailed by Trey. The band really seemed on and well rehearsed. I feel like the show started to enter some special territory when they started Neat. And that jam itself seemed to go in some different directions than I've ever heard it. I feel like there were even some extra vocals added by members of the band throughout. And so that for me was when the show last night started to change. Also, the Maze was excellent. And as much as I'm attracted to listening to Page's organ solo, I've got to say that I can't keep my ears off of Trey's rhythm guitar underneath, and the crazy action that he is doing underneath of that. So I would recommend to everyone to listen to the Maze and give a little bit of attention to the non-lead line, actually. So, but overall, you know, After the meet and the Maze, I believe there was the Heavy Things, the couple of sort of well-played tunes, finally leading up to what I thought was going to be an Antelope to close the set, and was very happy and surprised when they started that. Really felt like it was very patient, really waited for things to develop. It didn't seem to be a typical sort of 3.0-ish 10-minute Antelope, and had quite a lot of extra to it. It was a great peak, at the end, and the room jumping ready for the second set.
Yeah, it. We could tell. I was on the couch last night watching, and you could tell the level of energy in around the Antelope. I know a lot of people while I was there the last four shows kept kind of anticipating the Antelope and saying like once they play it's going to be really pretty nuts. I wanted to go back to one of the things that you mentioned before. You talked about the meat, which I thought was awesome, and I thought it was a great example. You know, just kind of the level of comfort that they have in turning any situation into an opportunity when Fishman screwed up in the middle of the song, and he just got on the mic and he said, "You know what? I want another chance at that one." And as soon as he did it, Trey jumped in and they went in and kind of took a left turn, and it was so cool. They didn't sputter. They didn't like. Sometimes Trey kind of laughs it off, or he'll like, you know, point the finger or something like that. Fishman stood up, you know, stepped forward. He said, "That was me. Let's do it again." And then they turned it into a jam. It was great.
Yeah, and for me, I would say like that's one of the themes of Fish that I've really enjoyed watching and listening to over the years. Their ability to turn a potential mistake or a wrong turn into gold, more or less. So, and it's funny, you mentioned the Fish mistake in meat. I feel like he had another one earlier in the show, with the Buried Alive where they restarted it.
Yeah. Buried Alive. He kind of did like a soft restart at the beginning, didn't like quite have his bearings, but then that was another one too, where like, I don't know how well you could hear it in the room, but, after he did that, Mike started playing a variation on the bass line. Just jumped in immediately in a completely different, you know, kind of tonal center, just in the intro, just while they were getting fired up and added some energy to it. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, no, I totally remember that now, and I'm looking forward to the re-listen later tonight for sure. But that definitely was in my memory as well. I remember thinking it was a little bit odd at the start, and I heard something weird with Fish. But you're correct in that. Mike just seemed to jump right in and patch, and they were off.
Yeah.
So all in all, a pretty enjoyable first set. I thought the energy was really high. You know, even with the ballad, you know, and the quote unquote slower tune. But you know, all in all, pretty thrilled with the first set and stacked up pretty neatly, nicely to what I had seen in prior nights over the weekend. But I'm sure we really want to talk about the second set, because that, for me, was where I lost it more or less.
So let's get into that, because I think I don't think that it was too surprising that they kicked off a set during this run with Mike's song. I feel like Trey likes to do that when the stakes are higher, is kick it off and kind of do like a set long Mike's groove.
Exactly.
And you had to assume that something was going to be elevated about this, but man, I mean, like at what point did you know that it was going to start to go in the direction it went?
Well, there's a point that I am sort of trained to listen to, about 7 or so minutes as they're wrapping up what is the original Mike's jam. And there's a point where, you know, it might go to hydrogen, it might go to simple, or maybe they'll do the second jam. And that's exactly where I was glued into. And I've heard the other versions that they've played in 3.0 when this happened. And I got to say, this sounds completely rehearsed. This was really smooth. There were Trey hits the two last chords of Mike's tune and then does it again. And once that happened, it was off. And there, you know, in the prior versions, there was sort of a little bit of a, I would say a little bit of a hitch maybe in the band as they moved from Mike's into what would have been the F major jam, which they did. But last night, it just sounded completely continuous. And it was amazing, completely amazing. This was the first time that I had seen a mic with a second jam, and had been waiting for it for, probably about 100 shows at least at this point. So to say that I was thrilled is an understatement. And then what they did with that jam, and again, it seems like for my ears, I think, you know, all of them are playing at an exceptionally high level, but I think one of the added things we're getting this run, sort of the the MVP for me, I think, is Paige's new keyboards, which seem to always get involved at the beginning of a jam or after the, when they've transitioned into a jam with a song. So, you know, the way that those can sort of paint, there's so much atmospheric to those sounds. It really adds a whole another dimension to their sound. And
yeah,
I was very aware of that last night too.
Yeah, I think I made a comment before about that as well. I mean, the new synths are definitely inspiring a lot of creativity from Paige. He's using them in interesting places and throwing in some textures that he would not otherwise use. So it's cool to see
right.
him make that kind of advancement. So one thing, just if we can dwell on the second jam, air quotes
yep.
there, and the transition to it
yeah.
and everything like that. What I thought was interesting was that I, like you, I immediately, I think probably because of all the discussion and the history
yeah.
with getting Trey to play the second jam, shout out to, you know, friend of the show, Drew Hitz out there, who also, you know, was the
well,
one leading the charge
yeah.
on that for so many years. But I heard them go to, because I listened to that for that transition to F major, and then you think, okay, well, they played an F, are they going to go into symbol, or is this really going to happen? But the cool thing was that they immediately modulated from there again, and I'm
yeah.
trying to, off the top of my head, you might have tracked it a little bit better. It sounded like they actually went to F minor, and then they went to B flat from there. I don't know, did you catch that?
I think that's correct, yeah. No, I you know, I'm in my excitement, I was hearing the modulation, and I, you know, again, I would go back and listen to that. I think you're correct on that. And that there was another quick modulation, and it settled, and they were off. It very well could have been in B flat. And just a quick side note, I was spending most of set break with our friend of the show at Drew Hitz, Drew Fish, and we were actually discussing the chances of a Mike song, and he had put it at about 0.3%. And I was feeling more like 30%. So I felt just, you know, some sweet justice when that actually started. And with him being in the room, it guaranteed, I think, that we were going to get that chance.
I just figured he called me a favor. He said, you know, hey, Trey, buddy, I'm here. You got to do it and lay it down with the second jam.
Right, and it's funny because I think that was the only show he was able to see at the run. He might be coming back this weekend. So the timing is fortuitous.
Wow, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
so
awesome.
But yeah, I would really like to revisit sort of the modulations within that, because that was something to my ears when it was happening that seemed a little different, and it's possible maybe the band had a plan, you know, once they hit F to do something else and settle in. You know, it sort of brings up the next thing they did, the Taste, which that song is never modulated once, and I feel like it did it three or four times last night, and may have been, in my mind, the jam of the night.
Yeah, in terms of creativity and playing something that's drastically different than what usually happens in the song there, I thought that was pretty amazing. And to say nothing of, we kind of blew right past the Oh Holy Night, which was
in
the best possible way.
It was great, and it seemed like many didn't really know what was going on. I, you know, being a musician, I knew what song it was right away and sort of just started chuckling. But the scene they were setting in the room at the time was anything but anything but kind. It was a very, it was a pretty scary moment to see, and I think the entire stage was sort of all covered in smoke. It was a great moment, to say the least.
Yeah, you know what
and
kind of reminded me of was that in the Orlando '95, the Stash, when they
yes.
played Dogface Boy in the middle of it,
yes.
and just was kind of like Dogface Boy over like a minor bed, and it made it just sound really, really evil. It was that same kind of thing. Like I was a little scared at that point in the set.
Yes, no, it was that juxtaposition of this really beautiful melody over this really dark, you know, bottom that it was sort of provided on top of. So that sort of dark and light sort of dichotomy was very cool in that moment. And I think you just sort of you sort of hit on something, but I feel like a theme of this whole run is sort of has been taking tunes that don't necessarily have a jam segment at all and make them a centerpiece of the set in some ways. And I feel like that's sort of what happened with Chase last night as well. You know, it sort of seems like a continuation of that theme from every night, where there seems to be a surprise for the fans and for everybody in attendance. So, you know, it's amazing to see and to hear them playing that at this level. And I can't think of another. It seems, you know, for me, it would go back to the late 90s, around that time, where I just heard so much great consistency out of the band, and just willingness to try new things, more or less. So they have my complete attention.
Excellent.
Which is not always the case.
So then to kind of round up the fourth quarter, we had Wingsuit, Sneak and Sally, Week of Paw Groove,
yes.
Day in Life. I think the Wingsuit was very strong. The only thing I would say, if you were going to take off points for the show at all, was it looked like they were starting to run up against the curfew. And so Sally and Week of Paw were kind of abbreviated, especially considering how much they were jamming everything else out. I don't know, did it feel that way?
Yeah. I had the complete same thought, and I actually was sort of worried about that post-mic, seeing how long that went, and how they were going to wrap that up. I was really not wanting sort of a standard Week of Pog, especially after what they had done. And so, you know, I think it's to me, it seemed like Sally might have gotten a little bit cut off because of the clock, and maybe would have had more of an extended jam, whether it turned into a vocal jam or they seem to have been doing more recently or not. I do find that the Week of Pog itself was great, was excellent, and it's somewhat reminiscent of the Antelope Jam and its patience. And it's not always let to sort of, you know, let the music sort of carry it through, as opposed to being so directive with where they want to go. So I do agree. I think the Wingsuit, I actually had to run real quick out of the room. That seemed to be my best time to take a quick break, but was in for most of the rest of the song. I think it was very well placed. I thought that's exactly where the tune needed to go. And I think it was just more of unfortunate that, it felt like they were maybe up against the clock a little bit, especially in regards to Sally. But again, it was a great surprise at the time. I wasn't expecting it, and you know, the song placement and the decisions on when to play songs has been, in my mind, almost an A whole run. You know, considering that they're not doing repeats and haven't yet, it's a masterful job of craftsmanship of shows.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've been very, very impressed by, as you said, song selection and placement, the whole run. It's keeping things really excited, for sure. Any other closing thoughts on the show, and are you getting back to see any more, or is this it for you?
This is it for me, unfortunately. I will be making the trek out to Dick in about a month to see what kind of magic they're going to have in store for that 3-day run. But my time at the Garden for the Baker's Dozen has come to an end. And, you know, it was a great run. I had a great time. And I will say that, you know, probably last night's show, I would definitely recommend going into the mics and listening probably into A Holy Night. That was probably one of the crazier moments, either that or the Taste. I would ranked very, very high on the list. The only thing I'd mention is leaving the show were just constant waves of roars from the crowd throughout the Garden walking out, and wasn't something I had experienced over the weekend. So they were really, everybody was very jacked up leaving the show last night, and the band really delivered on all fronts. So very happily surprised with what they did.
Excellent.
And look forward to seeing what's on the horizon in a month.
Yeah, it's a good time. It is absolutely a really fun time to be a fan right now. So,
incredible. Yeah, no problem.
So thank you, Mike. If we were to get you to maybe pick out one clip that we should tag on the end here for people to listen to a little bit, what do you think is the best thing to highlight?
The one clip I would say, I would probably put the, I'd say put in some of the meat jam. That was very cool. I would say probably, or just take the last few minutes of the mics and go into O Holy Night. That transition was really cool, basically.
That sounds good. So yeah, let's go to a little bit of the end of the Mike song jam into That's Very Scary, Oh Holy Night. And thank you for listening. Thanks again, Mike. And we will be back this weekend with more quick hits of the final three shows. Thanks, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.